Blog Talk Radio.
I'm sitting here, as usual, not matching. You know, I always used to mock, like, when people had on TV shows and shit, like, stylists, like, every fucking TV show. I mock that. Like, really? You need somebody to just fucking pick out for you what to wear? Now I get it. Every time something works in theory in my head, I put it on and I'm like, oh, man, this doesn't match at all. And then, of course, I never change. I just go out wearing shit that doesn't match. I got, like, an olive jacket on with a gray shirt underneath, and it just looks fucking weird. I look like an old Italian guy. Yeah, that's all I got. Just an old Italian guy who doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. Enough about my dress. It's mandatory now. Every show I have to say something about how ridiculous I look at the beginning. But we do have an awesome show for you. We have Paul Ryan threw his hat into the ring to be Speaker of the House, and he's just wearing his corruption on his sleeve. When I tell you about the guy who he wants to be his top aide, it's like our entire fucking government is a joke. The federal government is a joke. They may as well, like, all get tattoos on their forehead that say oligarchy, sold out to the rich. I mean, I was really pissed off about that. I'm going to lead with that in just a second here. But we also have Jeb Bush is in trouble. It looks like his campaign is going, I don't know what noise that is, but that's what his campaign is doing. I wanted to say waffling, but waffling wasn't the right word, so I just went, that's Jeb Bush's campaign. Then Rand Paul attacked the Democratic primary field in a Fox News interview, and it was fucking ironic, man. He makes it seem like, oh, you know, on this Democratic side, there's nothing going on there. It's all bad. Whereas on the Republican side, I mean, Jesus, we got some brilliant people here, don't we? Adorable. And later on in the show, I got some bad news for bacon lovers, also known as anybody who's ever tried bacon. And one more tease. Christian website has an article up that argues rape, not really a thing, is it? Specifically marital rape. But when you see how far they go, the facepalms will be abundant. I'll leave it at that. All right, so let's get started here. And we'll do that with Paul Ryan and what he's up to. So the Republicans are looking for a new Speaker of the House, and Paul Ryan agreed to throw his hat into the ring. For a while, he was saying, I'm not going to do it. But then there are some people who are establishment Republicans and the Tea Party Republicans who are now calling themselves the Freedom Caucus, which is hilarious because they don't believe in freedom. But people from both camps, both wings of the Republican Party, said, yeah, I guess we can go for this guy. We can go for Paul Ryan. I guess he's the only one that has some level of crossover appeal. So today we get the news that he's making a ridiculous pick to lead his staff. So the International Business Times reports on this, quote, as he builds support for his bid for Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan has announced that he will name as his top aide a longtime corporate lobbyist whose past clients have significant business before Congress right now. They say if he wins the Speaker's job, Ryan will name as his chief of staff registered lobbyist David Hopp. Federal records show that since 2010, Hopp has lobbied for major financial industry interests such as insurance giant MetLife, the National Venture Capital Association, and Zurich Financial Services. He has also lobbied for investment firm BlackRock, which could be affected by efforts to change federal financial regulations and which could benefit from a recent proposal to shift military pension money into a federal savings plan managed in part by the Wall Street giant. And Hop has lobbied for Cayman Finance, whose business, quote, promoting the development of the Cayman Islands financial services industry could be affected by legislation to crack down on offshore tax havens. In 2015 alone, Hop registered to lobby for the Lebanese Al-Mawarid Bank on issues affecting the Lebanese financial sector, online retailer Amazon on legislation dealing with internet sales taxes, and food giant Mars on the Farm Bill reauthorization and implementation, as well as, quote, legislation related to food and pet food regulation. Federal records show that Hop has also previously lobbied for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Broadcasters, AT&T and the United States Telecom Association, Sony, and Entergy Nuclear. So what that means is the guy that Paul Ryan picked to be in control of everything that he does, his head staffer, his main guy, his right-hand man, that guy is up the ass of industry. He is industry. He is the establishment. He represents all the elite multinational corporations. I gave you the list here. The list is fucking endless. He has connections to everybody. So naturally, what arises from that is this obvious conflict of interest. Paul Ryan is going to have this guy working with him, and of course Paul Ryan takes money from all these different multinational corporations also. And what's he going to do? Is he going to represent the American people, or is he going to represent these special interests? I mean, the answer to that is obvious. Do you really think that they're there to look out for you and to care about your opinion and to push for legislation that the majority of the American people favor? Not even close. At this point, and here's the main takeaway, they're not even pretending anymore. They're not even pretending anymore, at least back in the day when there was corruption, and obviously there was corruption. There's always been corruption to one extent or another. They were self-aware enough to realize, ooh, this looks bad. Let's not do that. If I'm going to work with the corporate lobbyists, it at least has to be when I go to the country club on a Saturday and I play a round of golf and nobody knows, but I'm playing with the corporate lobbyist guy. I'm not going to hire that person to be the head of my staff. That's insane. But he does it. And what's the mainstream media doing? Not even a story. Credit to David Sirota of the International Business Times on this, because David Sirota might be the only person left in America who he'll do stories, and when he does the stories, it'll say breaking when it should say breaking. Like, he put breaking news, corporate lobbyist to, you know, head Paul Ryan staff or something like that. And I looked at that and I went, okay, that should be breaking news. That should be on CNN right now. That should be on MSNBC right now. That should be on Fox News right now. Don't make me laugh. That should be on the nightly news. They should be digging into this guy's career to find out, okay, this is what he's about. He's about multinational corporations. He's about big business interests. And to the real conservatives out there, you know what this is, right? This guy is a corporate socialist. He's a way to describe it. And what that means is, these guys don't actually believe in small government. They're not principled in their conservatism. No, they believe in small government for you. They believe in small government for poor people and middle-class people, but they believe in gigantic government for them, for people who are already rich. They believe in big government for the established corporations, for the elite. So they can raid the treasury all day long when it comes to bailouts and bonuses and special subsidies and special tax breaks. But when it comes to food stamps, for example, oh, cut that all day long. $1.30 per meal to make sure that kids don't fucking starve in America? Cut that, but make sure you do the farm subsidies in the same bill that go to the gigantic farms that don't even need the subsidies, but they get the subsidies because they've lobbied the politicians. The system is an oligarchy through and through. They're not even hiding it anymore. They're not even pretending anymore. They are simply not working for you, and this is the clearest example of it. You would think that, again, if they wanted to even pretend to care about the people, you hire somebody who's, you know, been a lobbyist on behalf of the people for any of a number of important issues. You know, who do you want to be a leader on your staff? Oh, I don't know, maybe somebody who fought for preserving Social Security because the American people don't want to cut Social Security under any circumstance. Maybe somebody like that. That person would never be hired in that position. But they pick instead the people who are puppets to Wall Street. So now you know Paul Ryan, if you didn't already know, he as well is a puppet to Wall Street. In your fucking face, man. They're just fucking rubbing it in your face. They don't care. They don't care anymore. Yeah, I hired a corporate lobbyist. Fuck off. You know, and this is the old George W. Bush trick, too. George Bush used to appoint former oil executives to be the head of the EPA in different areas. And then they'd argue, well, we pick these guys because they're competent in their fields. That's why we pick them. And the obvious response to that is, yeah, they're competent in the field and they understand it because they're used to evading the regulations. So, but now you put them in charge of regulations. It's like putting the wolf in charge of the fucking hen house or whatever the phrase is or saying is. All right, let's go to Jeb Bush now. Another ridiculous human being. Jeb Bush is cutting the pay of his staffers. Politico and some other outlets have a detailed breakdown of his desperate move here. So Complex reports, quote, the cuts will reportedly include revoking the paid status of some senior staff members, parting with selected consultants, and cutting payroll by as much as 40% later this week. The campaign's overall budget is also expected to shrink by 45%, with some of the impacted employees staying on the campaign on a volunteer basis. Now, I highly doubt that anybody really is going to stay as a volunteer to work on Jeb Bush's campaign. But what this shows you is the establishment is now backing away from him. That's what this shows you. And that means that Jeb Bush's days are numbered. Because the only way a guy like him was going to have a chance at all was to have the establishment 100% behind him. He needed to be swimming in cash. He needed to outspend everybody because he needed to make up for the fact that his last name is Bush and he has no personality. And his record in Florida was sucky as well, as we've detailed on the show before. But in order to override all these things against him, he needed to have so much money. And now it looks like the people on Wall Street and the elites are scared. They look at Jeb and they see another Scott Walker. Scott Walker, who was another establishment favorite, they realize very quickly, ugh, we can keep dumping money into his campaign and he'll still pull at 1%, so how about we just cut it off now, rip off the Band-Aid quickly, have him step aside and hopefully find somebody where we put everything behind that person and that person can beat Trump. Because it's true that the establishment doesn't really like Trump that much. Now, Trump, the reason why they don't like him is because he's a question mark, because they don't know for sure if he's going to do their bidding. They don't know if he's going to be a puppet because he's a little fucking off his rocker. And Trump's been saying, oh, I don't take any money from lobbyists or special interests. That's actually not true. He does. But it's harder to control him, and the establishment knows that, so they really don't want him. They don't want him, which is why, you know, the favorites were Scott Walker, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and Carly Fiorina to a lesser extent. But now they're in trouble. I mean, the establishment is scrambling here because they're cutting off money to Jeb. So let's say Jeb eventually drops out. Then they have to pick between Marco Rubio and Carly Fiorina, basically. They don't want Ben Carson because he's too much of a theocrat, and, you know, they don't know if they can trust him completely either. And maybe they would consider throwing money behind Kasich, but I don't know, after that first strong debate performance, he's been doing so-so since then, so they might view him as big of a question mark as, like, Scott Walker was. So it's getting scary, and it's getting scary also because it looks like Donald Trump really is going to be, you know, the favorite moving along here. It looks like it's his race to lose. Ben Carson with his bump in the polls in Iowa, that doesn't tell me Dickie McGee's axe. People are making a big deal, oh, Ben Carson. No, the thing is, Iowa's always been a little weird. Like, they fucking Santorum won in 2012 in the Iowa caucus. And how did that work out for Santorum? It didn't mean anything. He ended up losing, and losing by quite a bit. So, you know, Ben Carson leading in Iowa, whoop-de-frickin'-do. Even if he wins in Iowa, the caucus, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be somebody who can maintain it. I really don't think he will maintain. So it's getting weird, man, but Jeb is looking so pathetic. Oh, it's so sad to watch. So when reporters brought this up to him, what's going on here, man? Like, you're cutting the pay for your staffers 40%, some saying you're going to work as a volunteer and stuff. He's like, this is what he literally said, quote, blah, blah, blah. Come again, son? They're like, it looks like you're in trouble. It looks like you're in a financial situation here. He's like, yeah, you know, things are happening, blah, blah, blah. Next question. Whoa. You know what that tells me? Red flag. Wave that red flag. It means, yeah, everything you're saying is right. I am in trouble. I feel like the campaign is going horribly, and I don't know what to do. That's what that means. And then also, as I mentioned in the Kyle and Corn podcast yesterday, he whined over the weekend that he has, quote, better things to do than run for president. Oh, dude, stop it. You're so sad. He threw, like, this tantrum. He threw, like, a toddler's fit. Where he was so, if you want to vote for Trump, go ahead and vote for Trump. But I'm here to talk about serious things. I got better things to do than run for president. Why don't you guys like me? Because of what you're doing right now, dipshit. It's hilarious. It's like the ex-boyfriend who keeps calling the girlfriend. What am I doing wrong? You're doing it right now. Look at you. You're so sad. He feels so entitled. You know, he's from the Bush family. Daddy was president. His brother was president. He feels like, you know, this is his destiny. Like he's already won the race. This is how it works in my family. We win. We're elitist. We represent the corporations, but we always get into power. And now his campaign is like, that's Jeb Bush's campaign. I don't know what that means, but I think you know what it means. He's going nowhere. He's just fucking floating. You know, he's in limbo nonstop. All of his support originally was just because of the establishment pouring money into his campaign. Now that the money's pouring up, I mean, what's he going to do? Win based off of, you know, the force of his personality? That's adorable. Nobody thinks that. Jeb, you're sad, you're pathetic. Step aside, you're done. I like how I use the the random Jeb Bush campaign noise again. I didn't know that would be reappearing in the show, but now it's awesome. Now I think I should probably do that every show. All right, now I got to go after Rand Paul yet again. I had a dream last night, and in the dream, Rand Paul kind of thought I was a supporter of his. It was weird. I don't know where the fuck I was, but Rand Paul was like, hey, man, he said he saw one of the segments I did where I critiqued the way he's going about his campaign. He's like, you know, you're right about that. And then he kept talking to me like I was a supporter. And I was playing along. I'm like, oh, right, yeah, man. Yeah, no, you're doing all right, buddy. It was a weird dream. That shows you how big of a political nerd I am where fucking Rand Paul makes appearances in my dream. Rand Paul attacked the Democratic primary field in a Fox News interview in a very ironic way.
Well, on the Democrat side, Lincoln Chafee dropped out of the race late last week. That leaves the Democrats with a socialist, Phil LeBaron Bernie, and someone who you could possibly say is a corruptocrat. When Biden decided not to get in the race, we said it left him with the choice between socialism and corruption. And I think there's some truth to that. I think the Clintons feel like they are above the law and they can do anything they want. And I think there's still some really important questions that Hillary Clinton's going to have to answer. Number one, why was Bill Clinton making money from entities that were negotiating things that you had to approve of? A uranium company was sold to the Russian government. Hillary Clinton had to approve of it. Bill Clinton made nearly $1 million giving a speech to the bank that was brokering the deal. Same way with an electronics manufacturer that was trying to sell stuff in Iran. Had to be approved by Hillary Clinton. And sure enough, Bill Clinton got $750,000 giving a speech to that same electronics manufacturer. This is all in Schweitzer's book.
So at the beginning there, they say, the Democratic race is down to socialism or corruption. To which I respond, the Republican race is between corruption and corruption. or to go further here, corruption, and the pseudo-dictatorship clown. That would be Donald Trump. No, I mean, it's hilarious to hear people running on the Republican side launch attacks against the Democrats as if the Democratic field is weak. I mean, I've literally laughed out loud at the people running on the Republican side. And actually, to be fair, Rand Paul's probably the most sane of all of them. But, I mean, look at everybody else there. You have a fucking reality TV star who's the embodiment, the caricature of the dumb capitalist American. Like, just incredibly arrogant, overestimates his own abilities, thinks he's super smart when he's not. You know, and then you have the neurosurgeon who somehow believes evolution is a hoax and believes the world is 6,000 years old, the self-hating black man. And then you go down the list, you have Carly Fiorina, the woman who hates women, who had a horrible career as a CEO, but she touts her career as a CEO as if she was a success. You have Marco Rubio, the best example of an empty suit I've ever seen. He might as well have the Koch brothers' hand up his anus controlling his mouth because he's a sock puppet and nothing else. I mean, Mr., you know, can't keep it together for a split second. Got to... Sorry, I had to sip my water. Jokes. Mike Huckabee, the theocrat. Yeah, there you go. So it's not even just down to on the Republican side corruption versus corruption. It's corruption versus theocracy versus pseudo-dictatorship versus reality star. And there's nothing good there. Now, I'm willing to concede that Hillary Clinton, indeed, I would say, is corrupt. For sure, and there's plenty of things that prove that. We've discussed how Elizabeth Warren lobbied her back before she was in Congress, where she would say, you know, you can't vote for this bill, this bankruptcy bill, because it favors the corporations. Hillary Clinton said, oh, no, you're right, I wouldn't do that. And she didn't then, but then like a year later, she did. And the list goes on and on. It is true that the Clinton Foundation, they take money from all these different world governments and all these corporations, and they do return favors. We've covered the stories on the show. That's certainly true. So, but the idea that, what, people on the Republican side are not as corrupt as Hillary Clinton, at least? Oh, spare me. Everybody on that side is corrupt. Everybody on that side. I have this saying I often use on the show where I say, right, the Democrats are 80% corrupt, but the Republicans are 100% corrupt. I mean, that's in a nutshell. Obviously, those numbers are made up, but there's truth in that because when you look at the record of all the elected Republicans, that's the case. You hardly ever see them vote against, you know, the people who were giving them campaign contributions, save maybe Rand Paul's dad back when he was there, Ron Paul. So it just stop. And it's not even just socialism. Again, this is why I did segments where I told Bernie, don't say that. Don't just say I'm a socialist, because then the right wing is going to launch attacks against you either way. But what you're saying is not actually true because you're not really a socialist. Now, he likes to say democratic socialism. I still don't like that term. Say social democrat, because that's really what he is. And it's a more nuanced position, and it would kneecap some of the arguments coming from the right against you. But that's the point, is that on the left, you do have Hillary Clinton, who's pretty corrupt, but at least she's decent on social issues. And then you have Bernie Sanders, who's a social democrat, who wants to make the U.S. look more like Scandinavia, which makes sense. But then on the Republican side, you have all sellouts and some theocrats and some pseudo-dictators who want to pretend like the Supreme Court doesn't exist and they can override it based on their whims. Between the two sides, there's no question which one makes more sense. And Rand has no clue what the fuck he's talking about here when he lambasts the Democrats as if they're the ones who are a joke. No, Rand, your side is a joke. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got to get into some Ben Carson stuff, which means we'll be laughing. Then we'll get into Donald Trump and his recent gaffe, although gaffes don't even seem to fucking hurt him because he's Donald Trump. And later on in the show, we have the former British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, spoke about the Iraq War with Fareed Zakaria. And he made some interesting comments. There's a lot to take away from that segment, and there's a lot to break down in that segment. He's basically a smarter version of George Bush, but he's still you know, it's his legacy, so he's still twisting some stuff, and he's just wrong either way. All right, so stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that stuff and much more.
Most incredible, baby. Yeah. Yeah. I can't see them coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. I can't see them coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. Good dude, I know you love me like cook food, even though a nigga gotta move like a crook move. We was together on the block since for lunch. We should have been together having four seasons brunch. We used to use umbrellas to face the bad weather. Now we travel first class to change the forecast. Never in bunches, just me and you. I loved your point of view because you held no punches. Still I left you for months on end. It's been months since I checked back in. We're somewhere in a small town, somewhere locking them all down. Wood grain, corn chains, armor all down. I can understand why you want a divorce now. So I can't let you know it, pride won't let me show it. Pretend to be heroic, that's just one to grow it. But deep inside a nigga so sick, I can't see him coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. I can't see him coming down my eyes, so I gotta let the song cry. I can't see it coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. I can't see it coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. On repeat the CD of Biggs, me and my bitch. Watching Barney and Clyde pretending to be that shit. Empty gun in your hand, Sam, let me see that clip. Shopping streets, pull out your Visa quick. Nigga had a very bad credit, you helped me lease that whip. You helped me get the keys to that V.6. We were so happy poor, but when we got rich, when the signals got crossed, when we got flipped, rather mine, I don't know what made me leave that shit. Made me speed that quick, let me see, that's it. It was the cheese, help them bitches get amnesia quick. I used to cut up their buddies, now they saying they love me. Used to tell their friends I was ugly and wouldn't touch me. Then I showed up in that dubbed out buggy, and then it got fuzzy and they don't remember that, and I don't remember you. I can't see it coming down my eyes, so I gotta make this song cry. I can't see it coming down my eyes, so I gotta make this song cry. Yeah, I seen them coming down your eyes, but I gotta make this song cry. I can't see it coming down my eyes, so I gotta make this song cry. The face of stone was shocked on the other end of the phone. Word back home is that you had a special friend. So what was those so special then? You have given away without getting at me. That's your fault. How many times you forgiven me? How was I to know that you was plain sick of me? I know the way a nigga living was whack. Shit, don't get a nigga back like that. Shit, I'm a man with pride. You don't do shit like that. You don't just pick up and leave and leave me sick like that. You don't throw away what we had just like that. I was just fucking them girls. I was gonna get right back. They say you can't turn a bad girl good. But once a good girl's gone bad, she's gone forever. I'm on forever. Shit, I gotta live with the fact I did you wrong forever. I can't see them coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. I can't see them coming down my eyes, so I gotta let the song cry. I know I seen them coming down your eyes, but I gotta make the song cry. I can't see them coming down my eyes, so I gotta make the song cry. Fucked up, girl. We'll be right back.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. Let's get into some Ben Carson stories here, which are always funny. There's a Des Moines Register and Bloomberg poll in Iowa, and it basically asked the Republican voters why they like Ben Carson so much. So for those of you who don't know, Ben Carson recently took the lead in Iowa. And the reasons they give for liking Ben Carson, sheer lunacy. So first, let's go to the more banal answers. So there were some things that they said which made sense, kind of, sort of, a little bit. But then as we move along here, you'll see it gets progressively more and more crazy. So 96% of Iowa Republicans say they like Ben Carson because he approaches issues with common sense. Now, I don't think that's true, but nonetheless, the reasoning itself is not crazy. They're saying, okay, well, I think he supports, he makes his mind up based on common sense. Okay, fair enough. He has an inspirational personal story. That's certainly true. I can get behind that one. That's true. I mean, you know, one of the best neurosurgeons ever. Can't deny that. 85%, that's the reason why. He is not a career politician. That can be a good thing or a bad thing, but I don't begrudge them that. That makes sense. 85% of them say that's the reason why we like him. He was highly successful as a neurosurgeon. Again, that one makes sense. 88% say that that's why they support him. He has said he would be guided by his faith in God. Okay, now we're getting a little weird. We're getting pseudo-theocracy-like here. 89% say that's why they like him. It gets crazier. He has said that Hitler might not have been as successful if the people had been armed. 77% say that's why they like him. He made this comment, it was in the context of discussing, you know, Jews in Europe at the time. They were all armed, they weren't able to stop it. You do realize the Nazis were a gigantic army. What? You have some Jews running around with rifles? They're going to be able to stop the army? The Nazi army? Oh, the fucking French military. Hitler took over a tremendous swath of Europe. Other armies couldn't stop the Nazi army. You think a bunch of Jews carrying rifles? Oh my God, that's so ridiculous. 77%. Gets even fucking crazier. He has raised questions about whether a Muslim should ever be president in the United States. 73% say that's why they like him. We played the comments on the show where he said very clearly, yeah, no, I would never support that. I would not be okay with a Muslim being president. So as a matter of principle, I would not be. Doesn't matter if we're talking about a secular Muslim. Doesn't matter if we're talking about somebody who he agrees with on every other political issue. I just know to Muslim presidents across the board. 73% are like, that's why I like him. He hates the Muslims. All right. And the craziest one of all. He has said the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, is the worst thing since slavery. 81% of Iowa Republicans say that's why he's my man. And the pollster was actually kind in the framing here and in the phrasing, because that's not really the only thing he said. He also went on to say it is slavery in a way. That's what he said about Obamacare. Obamacare is slavery in a way. Yeah, Obamacare is the worst thing since slavery. Obamacare is basically the opposite of slavery. Now, my opinion doesn't go far enough. I would have preferred a Medicare for All system, a single-payer system, as I've spoken about time and time again. But we're talking about a piece of legislation that expanded Medicaid in the states that fucking accepted it, so you cover many more poor people. And it's an individual mandate for people to buy into a private health insurance system, which the Republicans say they like, and more people are covered. And not to mention all the other positive aspects of this. Like, back before Obamacare, sometimes health insurance companies would spend 50% of their money on overhead and only 50% on care. Under Obamacare, at least 80% of the money has to now go to care. That saves lives. It's unbelievable. The ban on pre-existing conditions, that saves lives. They go, nope, that's the worst thing since slavery. Having better health care is the worst thing since slavery. 81% say that's why I like him, because he said something that is factually incorrect and absolutely absurd. Lunatics. Lunatics. Don't give me false equivalence nonsense. Don't give me this bullshit that, you know, Iowa Republicans are the same as California Democrats. It's just not true. They believe absurd things that are false, that are false. And Ben Carson always goes into this tap dance when you talk about this stuff, where he says, why are you being so politically correct? Why are you calling me out of my bullshit and being politically correct? No, I'm not being politically correct. I'm being correct. You are incorrect. I'm not offended by what you're saying. What you're saying is just wrong. It's not true, so I'm calling it out. How dare you call me out? How dare you fact-check me? That's politically incorrect to fact-check me. For fuck's sake, they got all these tricks now. And for those of you who think Carson might not be as crazy as these Iowa Republicans are, Chuck Todd asked him why he's so calm and low energy over the weekend. He was on Meet the Press. Listen to what he said. He said, quote, I have plenty of energy, but, you know, I am soft-spoken. I do have a tendency to be relaxed. I wasn't always like that. There was a time when I was, you know, very volatile. But, you know, I changed. As a teenager, I would go after people with rocks and bricks and baseball bats and hammers. And, of course, many people know the story when I was 14, and I tried to stab someone. And, you know, fortunately, you know, my life has been changed, and I'm a very different person now. Who says that? Hey, man, why are you so calm and relaxed all the time? You know, I wasn't always like this. There's the time I tried to stab somebody and kill them. There's the time I used a baseball bat and a hammer. There's the time I used to actively try to do physical violence on everybody in sight when I was a teenager. Many people know this story. No, they don't. I didn't. I follow politics closer than anybody in the country. I didn't know this story. What the fuck is... What is this? And the Republicans and I were like, that's my man right there. You're a psychopath when you're a teenager who doesn't care about anybody else. Try to kill people. Neurosurgeon in the middle, credit to the neurosurgery part. And then, you know, out the other end, you have just flat-out untrue statements, compare everything to slavery and the Nazis, be just a lunatic. And they're like, I like him. I like him. He's our token black guy. What? Did I say that out loud? I mean, I like him because of this other stuff, which is also stupid. All right, now, I'm not done with Ben Carson. I got to go to some other stuff that he said on Meet the Press. Set this up for you real proper in a second. All right. Ben Carson spoke about abortion with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, and it was ugly.
Who's right, I guess, should be superseded, the mother or the unborn child? Whose rights? Who has greater rights? In the ideal situation, the mother should not believe that the baby is her enemy and should not be looking to terminate the baby. You know, things are set up in such a way that the person in the womb who's the greatest interest in protecting the baby is the mother. We've allowed the purveyors of the vision to make mothers think that that baby is their enemy and that they have a right to kill it. Can you see how perverted that line of thinking is?
What if somebody has an unwanted pregnancy? Should they have the right to terminate?
No. Think about this. That during slavery, and I know that's one of those words you're not supposed to say, but I'm saying it. During slavery, a lot of the slave owners thought that they had the right to do whatever they wanted to that slave, anything that they chose to do. And, you know, what if the abolitionists had said, you know, I don't believe in slavery. I think it's wrong. But you guys do whatever you want to do. Where would we be?
Definitively, do you want to see Roe v. Wade overturned?
Ultimately, I would love to see it overturned.
And that means all abortions illegal, or is there still an exception that you would have?
I'm a reasonable person. But, and if people can come up with a reasonable explanation of why they would like to kill a baby, I'll listen.
Life and health of a mother?
Again, that's an extraordinarily rare situation. But if in that very rare situation it occurred, I believe there's room to discuss that.
Rape and incest?
Rape and incest, I would not be in favor of killing a baby because a baby came about in that way. And all you have to do is go and look up the many stories of people who have led very useful lives who were the result of rape.
What happened to small government, big guy? This is what these guys always tell us. Now, the Democrats want to get in your life and run things, and they like big government, centralized control of everything. You just said you're going to tell a rape victim that she has to carry the fetus to term. Don't you dare ever talk about big government to Democrats again. Because at least when the Democrats talk about big government, they're talking about making things more efficient and supporting government programs that make sense and fix problems and have better outcomes, like universal health care, for example, or education or other things. He believes in small government except for when he doesn't, except for when he wants to tell women after they were raped that, sorry, you can't get an abortion because I say so. No, look at how extreme this guy is. Even when he's asked, what about the life and the health of the mother? He can't just say, yes, under those circumstances, you absolutely can get an abortion. He can't say it. If the mother's going to die, he can't just say, yes. That's one example where, fine, I'm fine with it. Can't even say that. Why? Because deep down, does he really believe it? You tell me. At best, he's conflicted on it. At worst, his real answer is no, but he covers it up by acting like he's conflicted on it. He goes, well, there's room to discuss that. Oh, is there? There's room to discuss that. The mother's life is in danger. Nah, well, maybe we'll have the conversation. It's beyond ridiculous, man. Because, and you know why it's so crazy? Because it just, you're actively avoiding the nuance of the situation at hand. So what I mean by that is, really, the moment of conception, boom, that's it, conversation over. The thing has Second Amendment rights, the thing has, the entire Constitution applies to it. The second you're done having sex, man, that's ridiculous, because we're talking about gametes and zygotes and embryos and pregestation fetuses. Now, I understand that there's a logical discussion to be had at some point along the way when you get to around viability, or as I always say, when the nervous system is created and then pain is involved. There's a reasonable conversation to be had there, and I'm open to having that discussion and having that debate. But when you say, no, I'm going all the way back to conception, the second you're done fucking, there's an old Bill Maher joke that goes, before the guy can light a cigarette and before the woman goes, how are you feeling? There's a third person in the room. No, there's not. It's literally a pile of goo. Okay, it's true. That's what it is. You can't say it has none of the characteristics yet of a human being. Now, over time, it will get to that point, but to not discuss the nuance of what it is at that moment means you are actively avoiding the nuance because you're an ideologue. Because you're a partisan hack, because your mind is made up and you don't care about the detail of the conversation at hand. It is profoundly anti-intellectual. And this just shows you how, you know, outside of the realm of respectability he is. And another thing I can't stand about Ben Carson is that every time he makes a dumb point, he puts on this face like, gotcha. Like he'll ask a question that he thinks is like a question trapping Chuck Todd, and then he puts on the face like, no, wipe that smug-ass look off your face, because what you're saying is not a gotcha. You've totally bought into the far right-wing propaganda on abortion. And he said, quote, during slavery, I know that's one of those words you're not supposed to say, but I said it. Again, he's doing the old trick I just mentioned in the last segment, where now it's a common right-wing thing where you say something that's absurd and dumb, and then you say, well, don't be politically correct for disagreeing with me. Why are you being so politically correct? Why are you disagreeing with me? You're just being politically correct. No, I'm being correct. You can't compare abortion to slavery because that doesn't make sense, because that's not true. But he makes it seem like it's obvious, and he's the only one saying it. No, the reason why very few people say it is because it's not obvious, because it's a dumb, extreme thing to say. He compared pro-lifers to abolitionists. Abolitionists were fighting for people to have more rights. Today it's the pro-choicers who are fighting for people to have more rights, not the so-called pro-lifers. And again, I'm the guy who says I'm a moderate on the issue of abortion. I think there's a discussion to be had. I think you draw a line somewhere. I think you could talk about viability and stuff like that. But these guys, they're not nuanced in their take. They say conversation over the second you're done having sex, piss off. Well, that's not – that position is irrational. That's the argument I'm trying to get across to you right now, but they're just not going to get it through their thick heads. So classic Ben Carson, and I really hope that people pay attention to shit like this that he's saying, because I don't think he's going to get through the primary, but if he does get through the primary, the American people need to know what he thinks about this stuff, because this is not what the American people believe in. We've shown the polls before on the show. When you ask the American people, hey, do you believe in abortion in all cases? Do you believe in abortion in some cases? Or do you believe all abortion should be banned? The lowest ranked answer is all abortion should be banned. The highest ranked answer is the nuanced take. In some cases, abortion should be legal. But what's above Ben Carson's position is every other position. People are more likely to say allowed in all cases and allowed in some cases than ban it in all cases. No, he's extreme. He's a fringe candidate. And just because he talks softly doesn't mean that he's making sense and doesn't mean he's rational. Now, squeeze in one or two more here for another break. All right, Donald Trump. I've done, I think, all candidates so far, except for the Paul Ryan story. I guess a lot of election-related stuff today. Donald Trump did a town hall-style interview, and he said something in the midst of it that perfectly highlights his privilege.
Life really has been a no, and I fought through it. I have been, and, you know, I talk about it. It's not been easy for me. It has not been easy for me. And, you know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. I came into Manhattan, and I had to pay him back, and I had to pay him back with interest. Into Manhattan, I started buying up properties, and I did great, and then I built a Grand Hyatt, and I got involved with the convention, so I did a good job, but I was always told that that would never work. Even my father, he said, you don't want to go to Manhattan, that's not our territory, because he was from Brooklyn and Queens, where we did, you know, smaller things, and he said, don't go to Manhattan, that's not our territory, but he was very proud of me, but all my life, I was told no. Even for this, I mean, they said, oh, what do you want to do it for? Don't do it, don't do it. You're against professional politicians. So far, I'm not impressed. I will tell you that.
By the way, let's just put this in perspective. You said it hasn't been easy for you, but my dad gave me $1 million
loan.
That probably is going to seem
you're
pretty
right.
easy to a lot
you're
of people.
Right. But $1 million isn't very much compared to what I built.
Look at his context and look at his perspective, because that tells you a lot about how he sees the world. He needed somebody to clarify, to say, Donald, you just said that, you know, you got a small loan of $1 million. Like, do you not see how ridiculous that is? And he's like, well, I kind of get it, but I am something. What is that? I turned it into more. And there's people right now everywhere in the world. There's some guy in the middle of Harlem right now that just doesn't have an opportunity, so he'll never get that small $1 million loan. But if you did give him that $1 million loan, he'll create the best clothing company anybody's ever known. You know, he'll create whatever. You fill in the blank with whatever industry you like or you want. There's people everywhere that have these great ideas that never get it financed because they don't have rich families or they're not connected, so there's no nepotism involved. And that's where Donald Trump, he's got this fucking blank spot in his mind. Well, he's got a lot of blank spots in his mind, but look at some of the stuff he said. Quote, my whole life has been a no. Your whole life has been a no. You're the guy who spends all day, every day bragging about how great you are and how you're a brilliant capitalist and how everybody worships you. Which one is it? You can't have that both ways. It's one or the other. Either your whole life has been a no, or you're the brilliant capitalist that everybody worships, that everybody bows down to, and that, you know, you're the boss and everybody knows it. Which one is it? And he says, it hasn't been easy for me. If it hasn't, think about this, Don. If it hasn't been easy for you, how the fuck has it been for a grandma living in Toledo, Ohio, only on Social Security? How's it going for her? Have you thought about that? No, it's this extreme subjectivity that only the Republicans show. And that is true. Make no mistake about it. Being too hard on the Republicans. No, look at the shit the Democrats say, even the ones that I dislike, like Hillary Clinton. Look at the shit that they say, and look at the shit that the Republicans say. Everything is so myopic. Everything is so just only how they see it, and they're unable to put themselves in somebody else's shoes. At least the Democrats do talking points that show, hey, I'm sympathetic to people in other positions than me. This jackass, my whole life has been a no. It hasn't been easy for me. Oh, you poor billionaire. He only got a $1 million loan for his first project, not 10 like he wanted. My dad gave me, quote, a small loan of $1 million. Small loan of $1 million. His dad was worth hundreds of millions of dollars, by the way. Kicker to all of this. Now he thinks he's so brilliant. He thinks he's such a business genius. Guys, he went bankrupt at least 4 times. His companies went bankrupt. Now he does a tap dance. And says, I never went bankrupt, but that's not what anybody said. People are saying your companies went bankrupt, so you never personally went bankrupt. But what happened when those companies went bankrupt? You screwed over everybody who was a hard worker who was depending on those jobs for a living, and then you ran out the back door with the money. It's the old Mitt Romney trick, the old Bain Capital trick. You harvest companies for a profit. You leverage it. You load it up with debt. You take a big cut for yourself. Then you go, bankruptcy. I got to file for bankruptcy. And then everybody else gets screwed, and you get richer. That's what happened here. But here's the thing. You know, you give me a $100 million head start. Remember, that was worth hundreds of millions. But you say, oh, you only gave me $1 million. Ooh. You give me a $1 million head start. Here's what's going to happen. None of my companies are going to go bankrupt 4 times. And I'm not going to exploit other people to get rich. So in that sense, I'm a business genius compared to Donald Trump. You're a failure, son. And then now what does he do? He just sells his name to people to use it. Because he's this bravado, this false bravado he has seeped into the minds of the idiots in America, and they take the word Trump, and in their mind that's linked to success. So people go out to him and they say, you know, I want to open my own casino, or I want to open my own restaurant or something. Can I use your name, Trump, for it? And then he rents out his name, and people just pay him to use his name. It's a house of cards. It's a house of cards. He's not some sort of brilliant guy who has these fantastic strategies. No, he's a selfish prick who doesn't care about hurting other people, so he exploited the bankruptcy laws to his own advantage to fuck over everybody else, and now this guy has the nerve to run for president and say, I care about your average guy. Oh, really? Then why is your context dead wrong? Where you say, my whole life has been a no, it hasn't been easy for me, I only got $1 million from my dad for my first loan. So many people would give an arm and a leg to be in that position, and then guess what? They wouldn't complain when they're in that position. But you selfish prick, you're in that privileged position, and you don't even fucking realize that you're privileged because you're not that bright. All right, should I take a break? I think it's time for a break. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. Let me take a quick break now, and then when we come back, I got 6 stories I got to get to. They're good. We got Chris Christie talking about Black Lives Matter. We got Tony Blair talking about the Iraq War. And then we have the FBI trying to get rid of police body cameras. That's a gross story. And also Saudi Arabia and the bullshit that they're up to today. All right, guys, stay right there. We'll be right back. Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. All right, we're back, guys. All right, let me do some housekeeping real quick. What I mean by that, I'll give you an update on what's happening with the shirt drive here. So a few weeks ago, we started a Secular Talk shirt drive. 50% of the money is going to go to Lilith Penn, who does a whole bunch of work for me, and she does it for free. This is the least I could do to show her my appreciation. And 50% of the funds are also going to go to Wolfpack. Wolfpack is, of course, the movement to get a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics. So I wanted to give you guys an update real quick as to how the shirt drive is going. We've sold 218 so far. The original goal was 50 shirts. I still don't know who came up with that, whether it's the default that Booster does or if Lilith came up with it. But we blew past that, I believe, in one day. So that's good. A total of 218 shirts sold. We raised $2,810 so far. Now, I don't know exactly how the finances work in that I don't know what percentage of that Booster ends up taking for the work that they do and the fact that they make the shirts. Obviously, they have to cover the cost of the material and then a little profit for themselves. So I don't know exactly how much money is going to go to Wolfpack, and I don't know exactly how much money is going to go to Lilith. But either way, so far, it's been just an absolute success. We've sold more than I imagined we would. And I set the new goal after we realized that we blew by 50 in like a day. I set the new goal at 250. We haven't hit that yet, and we have 8 days left, so about a week left. Are we going to hit 250 or are we not going to hit 250? Now, I didn't buy my hoodie yet. I said I was going to buy a hoodie. I'm going to buy a hoodie. But just in case you guys don't know, we have regular T-shirts, Secular Talk T-shirts. We have hoodies, and they also have women's T-shirts as well. So if you haven't bought one yet, consider buying one. It goes to a great cause, and it has the badass Secular Talk colors, which are the obnoxious, bright-ass neon green and black. I know some people don't like it, but fuck you. No, I'm kidding. It's fine if you don't like it, but been our colors from day one, so might as well continue strong here and rep that. So I'm going to be getting mine soon, and it ships about, I think it's like a week to 2 weeks after the fundraiser ends. So for people who bought it and they haven't gotten it yet, don't worry. They send it all out at once, I guess, to save themselves work or whatever the case is. But if you haven't bought one yet, consider it. I'm going to get mine soon, and they're awesome. Okay, now let's go to Chris Christie. I believe I have a clip for this jackass. Chris Christie spoke to Black Lives Matter. No, he didn't speak to them. He spoke about them. Let me try that again. Chris Christie spoke about Black Lives Matter and police issues over the weekend. And as always, he went too far.
Let me ask you this. Governor of New Jersey, you deal with police and crime issues. FBI Director James Comey said something interesting. He suggested that police across the country may be more reluctant to crack down on crime because of what's the so-called Ferguson effect, named after the Michael Brown murder in Ferguson, Missouri. Do you see any of that in New Jersey, that reticence, because it's now become such a politicized issue?
I don't see it in New Jersey because the leader of New Jersey tells the police officers to go out and do their job without exception.
And they're doing it.
And they are. And you've seen it in a city like Camden, where in the last 3 years, after we replaced the police department there, John, and backed them up completely, all the political folks, murder rate is down 61% in the last 3 years in Camden. Yet you see murders up 19% in Chicago and up 11% in New York, and the murder of a police officer. The problem is this. There's lawlessness in this country. The president encourages this lawlessness. He encourages it.
Encourages it how?
Well, by his own rhetoric. He does not support the police. He doesn't back up the police. He justifies Black Lives Matter. I mean,
but Black Lives Matter shouldn't be justified at all.
Listen, I don't believe that that movement should be justified when they're calling for the murder of police officers. No,
but they're not calling for the murder of police officers.
Sure they are. They've been chanting in the streets for the murder of police officers.
Well, individuals have, but the Black Lives Matter.
Listen, you know, John, that's what the movement is creating, and the President of the United States is justifying that. But not only that, he hasn't backed up police officers from the minute he's gotten into office.
That is utter nonsense on every level. So first of all, I remember because I did segments about it. Yes, Obama came out after every single one of these controversial issues, and he gave a balanced take where he stressed the idea that I know that many communities have legitimate grievances in America, but you have to understand that it's hard being a police officer. You can't blame all police officers for the actions of a few. The men and women in America of law enforcement are good people and blah, 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 blah. He was so balanced that I said he's doing a false equivalence where he's kind of muddying the waters and making the issue murky so people don't see that we really do have a problem in America where black communities, they get, you know, undue focus on them. Especially, that's why the great book came out a while ago, The New Jim Crow, which details this about how the drug war is primarily focused on black people and they're disproportionately locked up, even though black people and white people use drugs at similar rates, and the list goes on and on. The communities are over-policed. Oftentimes in black communities, it feels like a police state because it is a police state. So I went after Obama for the opposite reason, because he's not being forthright enough and factual enough about what's actually happening. But here comes Chris Christie. Apparently, if you don't only support the police in every case, well, then you're justifying lawlessness. Justifying lawlessness? How many times has he come out and said the opposite of that? Again, in Chris Christie's mind, you can only back the police, and even when they do something fucked up, you have to back them. Because something, the lawlessness, is only by definition on the other side with those black people. When the cops commit a crime, you have to circle the wagons, defend them no matter what. He said Obama is encouraging lawlessness. How ridiculous is that? And then he said that, well, murder is down in Camden, whatever it was, 61% in the last 3 years, and that's because me and my rhetoric. Oh, please. Your rhetoric brought down the murder rate because I back up the cops and that's why the murder rate is down. No, you jackass. Did you guys want to know why that actually is the case? New Jersey has some of the strictest gun laws in the United States of America. That's why the murder rate is relatively low there, and that's why it's gone down. Now, and he points to other areas like, oh, Chicago, violence is up in Chicago. Now, what's the problem in Chicago? Because people say, well, they have strict gun laws too, but there's not a low murder rate there. Yes, but the problem is that the surrounding areas have lax gun laws, and people go out of Chicago, get cheap guns, and then they come back into Chicago with the guns. So the problem is not the strict gun laws in Chicago. The problem is that the surrounding areas don't also have strict gun laws. And then also the problem is the drug war. Because we're doing the war on drugs, you've created more powerful drug gangs in places like Chicago. So he has a fundamental misunderstanding of all the issues here. And then finally, when he says, well, Black Lives Matter is calling for murder. As the host rightly pointed out, no, there are individuals at a protest, or maybe two, who did some violent rhetoric. I condemn that. Other liberals and progressives have condemned that. Other Black Lives Matter people have condemned that. But the fact of the matter is, Black Lives Matter have killed a total of zero fucking people. Zero people. Who's killed more people? Black Lives Matter or police officers killing unarmed black people in the last 2 years? Can't hear you, Chris. I can't hear you. What's that? Oh, that's right. It's not the answer that you want, so you got nothing to say. And that's the reality of it. And want to play the same rhetorical games that Chris Christie plays? But he supports cops that murder everybody. That's what he does. He's on their side. This is the equivalent of what he's doing with Black Lives Matter. They want to murder people. The movement wants to murder people. That's like saying cops want to murder people. All cops want to murder people. But see, I don't say all cops want to murder people because that's not true. You can't say the Black Lives Matter group wants to murder people because that's not true. In fact, the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement have said the opposite. Do you know anything about Campaign Zero? Anything about them? Campaign Zero is basically the policy substance that goes hand-in-hand with the Black Lives Matter movement, and they lay out in detail exactly what they want. They want to demilitarize the cops. They want to redo the training so they know not to immediately escalate the situation. They want to have special prosecutors when a cop does something wrong, because the way it works right now, the cops are almost never brought to justice because they're buddies with the prosecutors. And everything they talk about makes sense. It's policy substance. But a guy like Chris Christie actively avoids the substance because he wants to say, they're the bad guys, we're the good guys, end of conversation, let's move along. Well, I'm not going to move along because you're wrong. All right, now, We got to go to Tony Blair, who's a guy who I'm not sure we've ever done a segment on. But first time for everything, I guess. Let's do it. Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair spoke about the Iraq War with Fareed Zakaria. Let's listen.
However, that Saddam Hussein did not prove to have weapons of mass destruction. Was the decision to enter Iraq and topple his regime a mistake?
You know, whenever I'm asked this, I can say that I apologize for the fact that the intelligence we received was wrong, because even though he had used chemical weapons extensively against his own people, against others, the program in the form that we thought it was did not exist in the way that we thought. So I can apologize for that. I can also apologize, by the way, for some of the mistakes in planning, and certainly our mistake in our understanding of what would happen once you removed the regime. But I find it hard to apologize for removing Saddam. I think even from today, in 2015, it is better that he's not there than that he is there.
When people look at the rise of ISIS, many people point to the invasion of Iraq as the principal cause. What do you say to them?
I think there are elements of truth in that, but I think we've, again, got to be extremely careful, otherwise we'll misunderstand what's going on in Iraq and in Syria today. Of course, you can't say that those of us who removed Saddam in 2003 bear no responsibility for the situation in 2015, but it's important also to realize, one, that the Arab Spring, which began in 2011, would also have had its impact on Iraq today, and two, ISIS actually came to prominence from a base in Syria and not in Iraq. And that leads me to the broader point, which I think is so essential when we're looking at policy today, which is we have tried intervention and putting down troops in Iraq. We've tried intervention without putting in troops in Libya. And we've tried no intervention at all but demanding regime change in Syria. It's not clear to me that even if our policy did not work, subsequent policies have worked better.
Ah, yes, so take that to its logical conclusion. What should the West do? You just said all these different things didn't work. Military invasions didn't work, airstrikes didn't work, not doing anything and asking for regime change didn't work. So what's the last thing on the table that none of us fucking do? www.staythefuckout.com. How do you not see this? He's laying out everything failed. Everything fucking failed. When we invaded, when we did airstrikes, when we asked for regime change, whenever we get involved, things go to shit. Exactly! Exactly! That's what the liberals, that's what the progressives have been saying all along. All along. And then what always happens when we bring this up, people turn around and smear the left, and what do they say? Pacifists. Pacifists. Look at you. You don't even want to get involved if somebody directly attacks you. No, no, no. You just made that up. Because the reality is, the overwhelming majority of liberals are not pacifists. Somebody attacks us, of course they want to respond. But that's it, we just want to do self-defense. So that's a time when war is acceptable. We weren't talking about that with all of our wars in the Middle East. That's obvious at this point. Right now, we're engaged in 7 different military conflicts in the Middle East. Some of them we have some ground troops, advisors on the ground. Some of them it's just airstrikes. Other places it's just drone strikes. But the list is 7 countries long, and it ain't fucking helping. How many times have we gone over the numbers? How many times have we discussed the studies that there's been a net increase in terrorism since the beginning of the war on terror? That means you failed. Same thing with the drug war. Oh, wage a war on drugs, and it's going to work out so well, we'll limit or eliminate the number of drugs coming into our country. Well, there's been an increase in that. And you also made the drug cartels more powerful, and also at least 60,000 people have died because it's a literal drug war going on. So in every objective measurable sense, the war on drugs failed and made it worse. In every objective measurable sense, the war on terror failed and made it worse. And for him to go out there and say, well, yeah, I guess the invasions didn't work, I guess the bombings haven't worked, I guess that didn't work, that's right. So perhaps we get the fuck out. How about that? Now, I'm not a crazy person. I get it. Sometimes, hey, we should have done a special forces raid to get bin Laden after 9/11. Sign me up. Go through the proper legal channels. Do it. I'm with you. Hey, we need to make sure that ISIS and whoever don't get nuclear weapons. Yeah, I'm with you. That requires intelligence and, if need be, again, special forces. But this idea of invasions, this idea of, you know, airstrikes nonstop, you're not helping. You're making the situation worse, and all the data shows that. 90% of the people we get in drone strikes are not the right people, and that's not according to Code Pink or some crazy organization. That's internal memos at the government that were just released in the drone papers. The Jeremy Scahill leaks, the new Edward Snowden. He's asked, was it a mistake to take out Saddam? He was asked that by Fareed Zakaria. And Tony Blair says, well, I apologize for the bad intelligence. I apologize for mistakes in planning, but I find it hard to apologize for removing Saddam. Well, you shouldn't. To say, hey, we should have stayed out, is not an endorsement of Saddam. When I say we should have stayed out of the region, that doesn't mean, yay, Saddam never did anything wrong and he's a lovely guy. It means, what business is it of ours to get involved anywhere that we see somebody who's an asshole? If you want to use that logic, go to South Sudan today. If you want to use that logic, it fucking got to take out Saudi Arabia. They're the worst of the worst. If you want to use that logic, North Korea's on the list. You want to use that logic, Malaysia tolerates slavery. You're going to tackle that government? You're going to take them out? If you want to use that logic, Brunei was just allowed in the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal. In 2014, they implemented Sharia law. You say you go after the Taliban because they support Sharia law. Well, why are you allowing a country into the TPP that just implemented Sharia law? There's no reasonable answer for this. And you have to understand, guys, it's a position that it just simply doesn't add up. To say, hey, we should have taken out Saddam because something, something, weapons of mass destruction, I don't even know what that means. So even if he had weapons of mass destruction, this idea that he's going to use them on, you know, fucking Nebraska in 0.3 seconds, it's made up. This idea that if we don't go after him, well, he's going to come for us. You made it up. So should you apologize? Fuck yeah, you should apologize. And it's not an endorsement of Saddam Hussein to say we shouldn't go in there and topple the regime. You want to know why that's the position that makes sense? Because you should be against all offensive wars. If you're not fighting in self-defense, be against the war. And that's with saying that, hey, if there's a genocide happening somewhere, the UN can act as one body. But for the U.S. or Britain to just fight a war in Iraq, when they're not under attack, that does make you the bad guy, whether or not you acknowledge it or realize it. And enough with your dancing around the issue on the question of ISIS. Yes, as a direct result, are getting involved in Iraq and de-bathifying the government and pissing off all the Sunnis, that led the relatively secular Baathist Sunnis to team up with the religious fundamentalist Sunnis, and there's your monster of ISIS. They were only able to get the territory that they've gotten because former Saddam generals got them the territory. The religious lunatics aren't that bright. They're fucking religious lunatics. But when you have the relatively secular Baathist regime who know everything about military strategy and how to hold territory and stuff like that, they're the ones that help the Sunnis gain more territory because they're aligned against the new Shia government, which we supported. So no more bullshit, no more dancing around the issue. You're fucking responsible. And so are the neocons, so is George Bush, so is Dick Cheney. You guys are fucking war criminals, whether or not you realize it or acknowledge it, because I haven't even brought up in the conversation yet the fact that at least 200,000 civilians are dead as a result of your actions. Some of them direct war deaths that we are directly responsible for, others because of the Sunni-Shia rivalry that we brewed up when we went back in there. But either way, you are responsible for it. All right, next. FBI Director James Comey made an outrageous statement recently about where an increase in crime is coming from. So Huffington Post reports, quote, "Police anxiety in the era of ever-present cell phone cameras and viral videos partly explains why violent crime has risen in several large U.S. cities this year," FBI Director James Comey said Friday. He said, while there likely are multiple factors behind the spike in violence in cities, including Chicago, officers and others nationwide have told him they see the era of viral videos as a link. He said, quote, "I don't know whether this explains it entirely, but I do have a strong sense that some part of the explanation is a chill wind blowing through American law enforcement over the last year, and that wind is surely changing its behavior. Okay, so I absolutely despise this, and I think James Comey should be fired. Because what he's doing here is he's shilling for cops, and he's shilling for corrupt cops. Because there are studies that prove that the more you record officers, the less likely they are to engage in bad practices in the first place. But he's saying, well, you know, you've handcuffed the officers, and now they can't act wildly irresponsible, and it just might be the case that when they act wildly irresponsible, the overall crime rate drops. So I guess you're arguing for them to do whatever the fuck they want, because if they can do whatever the fuck they want, then the official crime rate goes down. Yeah, but what about their crimes? Why are we not counting those? It is a crime when a police officer unjustly attacks somebody who's unarmed, or tases somebody when they shouldn't be tased, or kills an unarmed black person, or whatever the case may be. Look at this. He's arguing that it's not a good thing that we're recording cops. At face value, people should reject that. At face value. How can you argue against more information? You're arguing against us knowing what our police officers are doing with our fucking tax dollars. That's beyond absurd. And that shows you he's fucking playing for a team. That's what he's doing. Oh, man, the cops can't be abusive anymore, so people are getting away with more crimes. That's not even true. That's not even true. There's no evidence to back that up whatsoever. And, you know, if you're so concerned about all crimes that we need to do something to control it, motherfucker, we got 32,000 gun deaths in the United States of America every single year. Every year. 8,000 to 12,000 murders, homicides. Why are you not calling for gun control? Why is that not the first thing out of your mouth when you want to talk about crime? But no, it's let the cops, don't record the cops. Please don't record the cops, because then you might catch them doing some fucked up shit. No, but the fucked up shit is criminal, and we should be against all crimes, whether done by citizens or done by cops. And apparently it doesn't look like he is. The New York Times is reporting on a very telling story about Saudi Arabia. They say, quote, a Saudi activist has been sentenced to 10 years in prison and barred from travel abroad for another decade. The activist Abdel Karim al-Qadar, a professor of Islamic studies from conservative Qassim province, has been under arrest since April 2013. He was considered among the most vocal critics of religious extremism and militancy. He had posted videos online giving religious lectures in support of women's rights and coexistence. He was sentenced Monday by Saudi Arabia's specialized criminal court on charges including disobeying the ruler, founding a human rights organization, and supporting protests. All right, so this is an absolutely grotesque story. Look at what he's charged of. These are crimes. He's charged with the crime of disobeying the ruler. Hello, Islamic theocracy / fascism / dictatorship, because that's exactly what we're talking about here. Disobeying the ruler. How ridiculous. Founding a human rights organization. They're like, crime. You care about human rights? What a fucking crime. You guys just got picked to be the head of the UN Human Rights Council. And they're like, we're against human rights. I want you to know that right now. Then get the fuck off the Human Rights Council. Get the fuck off the panel. You shouldn't be there in the first place. You're a ridiculous government. I mean, fucking beheading people for drug smuggling and atheism and sorcery. You're a joke. You're a joke. You're utterly ridiculous in your ideology. You share an ideology with ISIS. You are Salafists. You are the strictest, most right-wing, literal interpretation of Islam. And they're lecturing other people about morality. For fuck's sake, founding a human rights organization, they're locking this guy up for that, and daring to support protests. God forbid you exercise a basic human right. And they're not even hiding anymore, and this is why this story is so important, because they're saying that one of the main reasons he was taken in is he gives religious lectures in support of women's rights and coexistence. So it's not even like he's somebody who's totally secular. Like me, where I argue for women's rights and other things because it just makes sense, divorced from any religious doctrine. He's actually giving religious reasons for that. He's saying, okay, you know, open the Quran or look at this hadith and boom, this portion right here can be used to support women's rights and can be used to support coexistence and can be used to say that Islam shouldn't rule the world and we shouldn't have a caliphate. We should live in solidarity with our brothers and sisters of other religions. They're like, how dare you? We're going to lock you up for at least 10 years. Well, then don't pretend to the rest of the world that, oh, we love the Americans buying our oil and giving us money and sucking off our princes. Oh, they're so great. We love them in every way. Because now we know, not that we didn't know this before, but it's clear that you know in the back of your mind, you're fucking dumb infidels. We're playing these dumb infidels. We just locked up a guy who used our religion to justify women's rights and coexistence. We're against women's rights and coexistence. We're using you. We're using you, and then we're spreading our Salafist ideology all around the world, and that's literal. We know that. There are many people inside the Saudi government. There's the redacted pages in the 9/11 Commission report. Officials in the Saudi government funding extremist Salafist mosques all over the world. All over the world. And then they're going to, oh, well, we love the West. Oh, they're our top ally. We do oil, money, stuff. Oh, please don't break off our connection. Oh, I couldn't wait to do that. We have to stop this unholy alliance. They're not even hiding how extreme they are anymore because they don't even think it's necessary. The Americans are their bitches. They got you by the balls. A guy uses Islam to argue for women's rights and coexistence. They go, that interpretation of Islam, our religion, not even allowed. Get in jail for 10 years, and I can't believe you tried to fucking start a human rights organization. They're not even allowing liberal interpretations of Islam in the country. They don't even allow it. Not even liberal interpretations of life. Forget secularism. That's not even liberal interpretations of Islam, where he says support women's rights. Nope. Lock them up for 10 years. How quick I would break up our economic reliance on Saudi Arabia, you guys have no fucking clue. All right, now you guys know I'm not one to willy-nilly start wars and do it unless we're under a direct threat of violence. So I'm not looking to start a fucking war or anything like that. But would there be a realignment of our allegiances around the world? Oh, fuck yeah, there would be. Because we're in bed with one of the worst regimes right now, and stuff like this proves it. We have a heartbreaking new report from the World Health Organization to talk about. The International Business Times says, quote, processed meat, such as bacon, sausage, and ham, pose as big a cancer risk as cigarettes, the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer said Monday. Additionally, red meat is probably carcinogenic. According to the BBC, the World Health Organization report says that even as less as 50 grams of processed meat a day, a quantity equivalent to two slices of bacon, raises chances of developing bowel cancer by 18%. The IARC is likely to give processed meat the highest carcinogenic risk rating, a category that includes alcohol, asbestos, arsenic, and cigarettes, and red meat, the second highest one. So that's fucking incredible, man. Processed meat, they say, has the same cancer risk as fucking asbestos and arsenic. That's ridiculous. Remember the stories when they broke about, oh my God, asbestos is terrible for you. I can't believe they used to insulate the houses with that. People are getting cancer because they're breathing it in and this and that. It was like everybody's like, oh my God, that's crazy. Look at this. It's killing us and it's in our houses. It's insulating us. Well, now they're saying, well, you eat processed meat? Bitch, you might as well be eating asbestos. Oh no. Oh no. A well-known bacon lover. I want to shed a tear. As a well-known burger lover. Oh. Oh, it hurts. It hurts so much. But facts are facts, man. And what do we do with this information? Well, obviously, it's on the individual, and you get to pick what your diet is to a certain extent. And it's probably best to make better choices, because apparently the more we learn about the way we eat, the more we realize, oh, no. Oh, no, this is bad. We're putting ourselves in an early grave if we continue with the same poor diet that I think many of us have. All right, I don't have enough time to do this last one. I got 2 minutes left. I'll save this one for tomorrow. it's a crazy Christian and what he's arguing for in terms of for women. It's gross, man. I'll just promise I'll get to it tomorrow. But I do have 2 minutes left. What shameless plug should I do in the 2 minutes? Let me think about it.
90 seconds.
I'll do an Amazon plug. How about that? We'll put it on YouTube, too. We'll get crazy. So oftentimes, you guys reach out to me and you say, hey, how can I help the show? You know, I really like what you're doing and I appreciate it and I want to give something back. And there's actually a very, very easy, simple answer to that. Just use the Amazon link that we have for Secular Talk. So we're an affiliate with Amazon, and the way it works is if you use our link, we get, I think it's 5 or 7% of your purchase, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Just instead of 100% of the money going to Amazon and the seller, 5 to 7% of it comes to us simply for using the link. So the very first link, you'll see it right below in the video description box, click that link, bookmark that link, and then every time you shop on Amazon, use that bookmark, and you'll be helping out Secular Talk more than you know. I'd greatly appreciate it, especially with the holiday season coming up. So if you guys can help a brother out that way, I'd absolutely appreciate it. Love you guys so much. Peace. All right, that was a nice plug. All right, love you guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.